Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Clausey here, and glad to have you with us. Going to really be talking about money today, and the show couldn't be more timely. Arthur Stein is my guest. He is a well-known financial planner in the Washington area, and an interesting background. I'm always fun to visit with him and talk to him. He worked for the government of Botswana.
Yes.
And I only know Botswana from the Gods Must Be Crazy movie, but the real place. You taught at the college level in Australia.
Exactly.
And worked on the Hill on the Senate side.
House Ways and Means Committee.
Okay, I mess that up every time. Very interesting background, and you probably know the Federal Thrift Savings Plan as well as any financial planner in the Washington area, and that is a good thing today because we heard as the news lead-in today, and we're doing this show in mid-January 2016, that the Dow Jones average has fallen 308 points. This morning, and people are worried about oil. They're worried about the Chinese economy. They're worried about a variety of things, the Iran arrangement. And today's column, and I hope everybody takes a look at it, because Art Stein supplied me with some fascinating numbers, but it shows what the various funds, the L life cycle funds, the G, the S, and the I, what they did last year and their short-term returns. And the G fund is the only one that made money last year, correct?
It's actually not the only one that made money, but it made more money.
Okay,
The G fund outperformed all the other funds. It was up. G fund was up 2%.
Correct. Yeah, I see here. And the I fund was down. That was the international fund.
And the S fund too.
Yeah. Okay. So those are big. And when the G fund is leading the pack, that's not necessarily a good thing, because it is not the most exciting way to invest. It never has a bad day, but it doesn't have a big return either.
Yeah, I would say this: the G fund did lead the pack last year. That's unusual, and historically, the G fund has underperformed all the other funds, including the F fund, which is a bond fund, the fixed income fund, over longer periods of time. Every once in a while, when the markets are very poor, as they were last year, the G fund outperforms, but it's typically not the case. And the problem with the G fund is that when you take into account taxes and inflation, your purchasing power is actually going down. So for long-term investors, that's a tough way to invest.
Right. And we saw in 2008 with the big recession, lots and lots of people in the thrift savings plan and investors nationwide went to the G fund or their equivalent of the G fund. And I remember at the time you saying, I can understand why they do that, but in fact, you're selling low. Correct. The market was going down.
And when I said I understood it, I meant I understand that people have an emotional reaction.
Yeah.
It was not a good financial choice, because when the market's down is when you want to be buying. It's not when you want to be selling. And the people who sold out, say, at the bottom in 2008 and didn't go back in, and lots of people did not, they missed out on this huge bull market. If they had just stayed in the TSP and the C fund, for instance, they would have ended up with much more money even after taking the loss. And the people sold out at the bottom didn't go back in. Had they stayed, they would have seen their money increase about 2.5 to 3 times.
And they would have been buying at bargain rates, too.
And they would have been. And, you know, especially distressing to me, when I see people whose monthly, biweekly investments, employees whose biweekly investments are going into the G fund, you can have a different allocation for your investments than you do for the overall allocation of your account. So even if you got nervous and put your money in the G fund, you could have continued to have purchased the C and the S and the I fund.
Yes.
And at least had that money go up. And that way, you know, you're only investing every 2 weeks. You're investing smaller amounts. The market's down and you're not going to be retiring in the next couple of years. Then you're buying when it's low, and that's a good thing.
All right. I want to ask you some of the questions that I pose in the column today. And then we've got a number of people who emailed us questions already. One of them, here's the question: does the poor performance of the stock funds last year, 2015, mean all your investments should be in the G fund, or that long-term G fund investors are better off? We sort of answered that, but no.
Yeah, and I don't think they do. And even for people who are near retirement, lots of people have been told, gee, when you're near retirement, most of all your money should be in safe investments. With the TSP, the least volatile investment is, of course, the G fund. But that's kind of built on two theories that I don't think are true. One is that it assumes that when you retire, you're going to take all your money out and spend it right away.
Yeah.
And that's not what's going to happen to people. They're going to be taking money out of their TSP and spending it for 20 or 30 years. And that means that part of the investments they have in the TSP when they retire should still be invested with a long-term time horizon. And of course, the other part of it is that switching your money into the G fund sort of assumes that the stock market, when it goes down, is going to stay down and never go back up again. And historically, that's never happened. And historically, the bigger the decrease in stocks, on average, the larger the subsequent recovery.
So, Great Depression is classic.
Big declines followed by big recoveries. Smaller declines followed by smaller recoveries. But over long periods of time, the stock market clearly outperforming other investments.
Okay. This is so true, too, that you talk about the emotional part of the thing here. Here's a question. International Fund, the I Fund, has been the worst performer of the three stock funds, the C, S, and I. Should investors ignore it or embrace it? None of the above.
None of the above. Again, we're talking about for long-term investments, the I Fund, it's an international stock fund, but it's mainly or maybe even exclusively invested in large company stocks in developed countries. So we're talking Europe, Japan, Australia, mainly. And, you know, these are still quality companies. The economies may not be doing great now, but historically have done well. And the I Fund has not done well for a long time, which leads me to believe that at some point in the future it will do well. And I recommend to my investment clients that they have about 20% of their investments approximately in international stocks.
And we were talking earlier about emotion, which cannot be excluded from this thing. You just can't do it. And I know someone who calls it the sleep at night factor. If you wake up at 3 a.m. and you think, oh my God, what have I done? Then you must do something. And you make the point in today's column, Federal Report column, you say, and perhaps most important, what's the role of emotion in investing? And then we give a link to your blog, which discusses that in some detail, but you have to be able to live with your investments, correct?
Well, you have to. The problem is, Mike, that, yeah, you have to be able to live with your investments, but what you're not seeing is when you put all your money in the G fund that your purchasing power is continuously going down over time, and that 10 or 20 or 30 years from now, the purchasing power of that investment is going to be a fraction of what you started out with. That doesn't keep you up at night because you don't notice it. It's a silent killer. Mm-hmm. And yeah, people notice the fluctuations in the market, but then they ignore history. We always are facing market declines because historically market declines, you know, occurred on a kind of regular basis. We've averaged a bear market, which means a decline of 20% or greater in the stock market from a previous high. Those average about every 3.5 years. Now, we're overdue for a bear market in the S&P 500, which is the C fund and the TSP. But we are in a bear market in the S fund, which is the small cap fund in the TSP. And even the C fund is down about 10 to 12%, I think, from the previous high. But if you don't do anything with your money and just let it go, historically, you know, yeah, your investments would have gone down for a while, but then they would have increased and ended up with an even greater amount of money. And I compare it to a person who has a yo-yo and the yo-yo is going up and down, but that person's walking up a hill.
Yeah.
So at a certain point, even when the yo-yo is at its lowest point, it's higher than it was at its highest point further down the hill. And that's because stocks fluctuate up and down, but historically they've had an upward bias. And, you know, so that prices of stocks have been going up and dividends have been going up over time.
I had a friend who has a chart on the wall. He's a financial planner, and it shows the market from inception to that then current date and the Great Depression of 1929 to whatever your end date is, 39. The depression, which was the worst thing that's ever happened to us economically, was just a blip in the chart. And it is, as you say, the man walking up the hill with a yo-yo. It's up and down, but it's mostly up.
Yeah, it has an upward bias. So I'm concerned, you know, I think about a third of TSP participants, about a third of their money is in the G fund. And that might be appropriate for a much older person who's retired. But for younger people, it's a disaster.
Good deal. They're going to take a short break here, talking with Arthur Stein. We'll be right back on federalnewsradio.com. Hey, Mike Causey, welcome back to your turn. I'm talking with Arthur Stein. He's a very well-known financial planner in the Washington area. And Art, I remember last time we were talking, I believe it was in the summer, close of vacation time, but there had been something bad or worrisome had happened in the market, and you said you spent the entire day calling all of your clients to kind of reassure them.
Yeah, in August, the market was down about 6% that month, and it was a pretty sudden drop. So I spent allocated, but we reallocated by selling some bond investments and going into stock investments because the market was down.
You said it's on sale, huh?
It's on sale. It was a good time to buy. That was a profitable move up until, you know, like this year with down 8%. But now I'm getting ready to do the same thing again. It's just reallocating into stocks when they're cheap is a great time to do it.
Well, that's a good ad for having a financial planner that is good, that you trust and can listen to, because it's like having a lawyer. The man who has his own lawyer has a fool friend. And in this case, you can diffuse some of that worry and realistically look at it.
Yeah, it's a huge advantage to having an investment manager, because it does take the emotion out of the investment process. The average investor underperforms not only the stock market, but actually the mutual funds that they're investing in, mm-hmm. because they tend to buy the mutual funds when it's really doing well or when that portion of the market's really doing well. So they're buying at a relatively high price. And then when the mutual fund doesn't do well, its corner of the market isn't doing well, then they tend to sell.
Yeah.
So they're buying when it's expensive, selling when it's cheap, losing money, doing it all over again a couple of years later. And a good investment manager should keep you from doing that, should keep you in the market. And it takes some of the responsibility off. And a lot of my clients, you know, a lot of the married couples, one spouse is really responsible for the investing and makes the other spouse nervous. And the responsible one, you know, it can be a big responsibility. They can be too emotional. They'd rather turn it over for me and then I can worry for them.
You know, it's not unlike driving. If you're the passenger, the front seat, you can often be very nervous the way the other people is driving.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw an obituary in the Washington Post recently, and I've seen this again and again, and it always strikes me. Someone who'd had a very long career in the government, successful career, they retired, and they were retired longer than they had worked.
Yeah.
They were retired 30 years. And I mean, that's sort of a lead into this question that Tamala emailed us. She said, I have nearly 23 years of federal service, and the whole time I've invested most of my money in the C fund, but still have a certain portion evenly distributed in the other funds. I still have about a little less than 20 years to go, maybe 17 or 18 years, and I'm wondering if it's time to move from the C fund to a less risky option. If so, how do I gauge that change to coincide with the changes in the stock market? Buy low, sell high. And this is an excellent question, because when she says she's got maybe 20 years to go, 17, 18, she's really got maybe 30, 40 years to go, including time in retirement.
Longer. I mean, yeah. I don't know how old Tamil is, but she's 17 or 18 years away from retirement. So I wouldn't say that it's a time to be more conservative than you are now. Now, she did say that most of her money's in the C fund. Probably makes sense to diversify into the S fund, which over long periods of time has outperformed the C fund, and maybe some money in the I fund and the F fund, too. You know, the F fund most years outperforms the G fund, but it's not in stocks, it's in bonds. But keep in mind, I mean, you know, 17, let's say, just to keep the math simple, 20 years to retirement, and then you're 65 and you retire, you could easily be alive to 90 or 95. Then you're looking at money you're going to need to spend 30, 40, 50 years from now.
Yeah.
I don't think that being conservative is going to, you know, pay off.
Yeah, that's right. Because you're
especially always... today, because stocks are down. You know, they're down 8%. Why become conservative now?
Hopefully, they're on sale right now.
Huh? Well, they are. Yeah. As I just looked, and they're down about 2% so far today.
Yeah. Here's one from John. Can Mr. Stein discuss the consequences / hazards of being in TSP equities, the CS and I funds, during a down market after separation from federal service at 70.5 and with the RMD required minimum distribution looming? What strategies can be implemented to hedge against the downside of RMD? If one has to sell low from the TSP, would buying low in a mutual fund such as Vanguard Total Market Index Fund help balance out long-term growth / legacy preservation?
Well, buying into the Vanguard fund is not going to do you any good because it's just in stocks. And so it's just one type of stock fund instead of another type of stock fund. Required minimum distributions called RMDs. What he's referring to is that when you hit 70.5, the year that you turn 70.5, you have to start taking money out of the TSP unless you're still an employee. But if you're retired, then you have to start withdrawing from the TSP and from all your IRAs, too. The amount you have to withdraw, though, it's a required minimum distribution. It starts out at about 3.6% of the previous year's balance. So if stocks are down and he has to sell something to pay the required minimum distribution, the way the TSP is actually going to handle it, that whatever percentage he has in the different funds, they're going to withdraw money from each of those funds based upon that percentage allocation. So you cannot say, because the market's down, I only want to take money from the G fund or the F fund, which you can do with an IRA. With the TSP, you know, if you have 20% in each of the five traditional funds, your withdrawal would have to come 20% from each
equal
of the
amounts.
Five traditional funds, equal amounts, and that's a disadvantage.
Well, you know, I've always thought, too, with a lot of people fixate on the required minimum distribution. As you said, it's not much. Starts out at, what, 3.5% of whatever your actual total is at that point in time. But the other thing is, you don't have to take that money out and throw it out the window. You can save it. You could reinvest it.
A lot of my clients, for their required minimum distributions, we just transfer it into their taxable investment accounts and reinvest it. And you do not have to spend it. Now, the fact that it came out, you're going to have to pay taxes on the amount withdrawn. So there might be a little less to reinvest. But still, it doesn't mean you have to spend the money. You can still put it in a taxable investment account.
Okay, here's a good one from Bill, who is based in Germany. He's in Europe with the U.S. Army MCOM group, and he says, I'm about 2 years from retirement, will probably work part-time with NAF, that's non-appropriated funds, with NAF job to stay in Germany. I will be buying an annuity with my TSP when I retire from civil service, 17 years of service in 2 years. My TSP account is 20% in the L2050 fund and 80% in the L2030. No trouble sleeping at night. My contribution allocation for the past 4 years is 70% L2050 and 30% 2030. That's the year that we'll start withdrawing. My account has lost about $21,000 in 2016. Is it time to move to the G fund, or should I wait in hopes of recouping the current loss within the next 2 years?
Okay, well, there are a couple of issues there for Bill. One is that he wants to know whether, you know, he should switch money into the G fund now. I think it's a little too late. But he's not telling us, you know, how old is he when he's going to retire, which, you know, he's going to work for a while after he leaves the government. When is he going to start taking money out of his investments? You know, if it's not going to be for 10 years, then all his investments are still long-term investments. He's got money in the life cycle fund, so they're gradually becoming more conservative as time goes by. Another issue which he raises, and it's an interesting issue, is he's going to take his TSP funds and buy an annuity. And that is an option you have in the TSP where you could take all your money and buy what's called an immediate fixed annuity, which means it's a guaranteed payment for the rest of your life, but your principal is gone. That could be a good option for a much older person, someone in their 70s or 80s. For younger people, I don't see it as a good option, especially for federal employees, because when they retire, if they're FERS employees, they're going to have their FERS annuity, which is a guaranteed payment for the rest of your life with an inflation adjustment. They're going to have Social Security, which is a guaranteed payment for the rest of your life with an inflation adjustment. Why take all your TSP investments and buy another guaranteed payment for the rest of your life that doesn't have an inflation adjustment? Seems to me that you might want to keep that money invested and use it to try and increase the purchasing power of your investment.
Okay, that, I wondered about that, because the annuity, it can be a good deal, but only for a very certain group of people.
Yeah, that's because, Mike, the older you are when you purchase an annuity, the greater the payout you're going to get for each dollar invested in the mm-hmm. annuity. So I had a client who was 82 years old, and this is about 10 years ago, and he purchased an annuity, and the payout was 16% per year of all the money he invested. He put in $500,000. He got $80,000 a year. And the principal's gone, but he only needed to get that payment for 6 years to get back his entire investment. And in fact, he lived a lot longer than that. Had he been 52 or 62, the payout would have been, you know, maybe a third of that.
I'd be afraid somebody would put out a contract on me.
Yeah, after well, I hit the annuity even. Company. You
yeah,
know, they,
right.
It's important not to tell them where you live.
Yeah. Don't do anything run by
post
Visa.
Post office box is good at that
exactly,
point.
Exactly. Here's one from Wallace, and he says, I still have a good 30 years before retirement. I'm in the L2050 fund to keep things easy. However, where I have more time, I'm willing to expose my TSP savings to more risk and hopefully bigger long-term reward. I'd like to switch my contribution allocation to 80% 2015 and 20% to the other funds other than the G fund. What's a good split of that 20% between the individual funds? And I guess the question is it a good split, a good idea to do that?
Well, I don't know about 80% to the L fund, but in terms of the five traditional funds, you know, some people do 20% into each of the five funds, which is equivalent to 60% going into stocks and 40% into fixed income. If you want to be more aggressive, you could do leave out the G fund, just do the F fund and the three stock funds, C, S, and I, and do 25% each. So then you're putting 75% in stocks and 25% in bonds. If you're a long way from retirement, you know, that's a completely appropriate investment.
Now, what about these people? We've had two so far that put it in, they put some money in the year 2050 fund and some in the 2040 or the 2030. Does that work?
I mean, I don't know what they're trying to accomplish there. Remember, when you're investing in the L fund, don't base it on when you're going to retire. Base it on when you're going to start withdrawing the money. And there could be a big difference there.
Very good. Got to take a short break here on federalnewsradio.com. Be right back talking with Arthur Stein. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, and I'm talking with Arthur Stein, a well-known financial planner in the Washington area. Art, we didn't do your website
yet.
Oh,
yeah. It's arthursteinfinancial.com, so www.arthursteinfinancial.com. ARTHURSTEIN financial.com.
Okay, and also I believe it's in today's Federal Report, my column. There's several references, and you do a blog, which is very interesting and kind of
a lot of the issues we're speaking about today, I've blogged about in the last month. And so if you go to the blog page on my website, you'll see that and other issues discussed.
Okay, got a call from a woman. She says she's 60 years old. She's in the civil service retirement system, just inherited parents' estate, so has other sources of funds. All of her funds are currently in the C fund of the TSP. Because the market is down, should I increase biweekly contribution or leave it alone or diversify my investment?
Well, it's a great time to increase biweekly contributions because, as she says, the market is down, and so it's a good time to buy. Again, I would urge some diversification, not put everything in the C fund. As I said before, you know, historically over long periods of time, the S fund has outperformed the C fund, and I fund hasn't done much of anything over the last 10 years, so it's probably a good time to buy there. So maybe for biweekly contributions, she might go to, you know, 25% each in the C and the S and the I and the F fund, because I wouldn't recommend to anybody that they put 100% into stocks.
Okay, very good. And you know, she raises an interesting point, too, and she seems to realize it, but I think a lot of federal workers don't. They think They think that they're sort of the norm, but if you're a federal worker, you have a guaranteed annuity. It's indexed to inflation, in some cases 100%, in others pretty much 100%. You have very good health insurance. The government's going to pay 70 to 75% of the premium. A number of real financial advantages. You can provide a survivor annuity that will go to your spouse if he or she predeceases you, you know. And I mean, they're in better shape starting out than most people. So, and correct me if I'm wrong, but they could walk on the wilder side as investors compared to the likes of us.
Yeah. You know, federal employees have the opportunity to be very financially secure in retirement. They just need to make some good decisions about their investments, especially for FERS employees, because the Social Security and their FERS annuity is probably not going to be enough to support them for most FERS retirees. So they have to be very careful about their investments. And I just wanted to say one other thing about the previous question. She said that in addition to the money she had in the TSP, she had also inherited some money. And I would urge her, either on her own or with an investment manager, to allocate her investments, not to have a separate allocation for the TSP and then ignore the TSP allocation when allocating the money you inherited, but look at the overall allocation of your total portfolio, including the inherited money, including the TSP, and you might decide, well, gee, if I'm going to have, you know, 20% in bonds, then you would decide, do I want that bond investment, which would be a bond mutual fund like the F fund, do I want that bond investment to be in the TSP where it's tax deferred, or do I want it to be in the inherited money, which is going to be taxable? And you can make those kind of decisions and end up much better off.
You know, it's funny. I ran into one of the people that designed the FERS retirement program and the thrift savings plan. Ran into him the other day, out of government. But, you know, the idea, a lot of people thought it was to hurt people, but they knew that the CSRS wasn't sustainable financially. Over the long haul, they wanted Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska, a good friend of federal workers and others, wanted to give the new people, the 1987 onward people, a good deal. So they came up with this FERS program, which, as you said, it's a defined benefit from the government. It's guaranteed to inflation to a point. They get Social Security with it. But that said, the TSP was the sort of the jewel in the crown, and the TSP was supposed to supply anywhere from a third to one half of their income in retirement. And so your point about it's not going to be enough unless you do some investing is...
Yeah, and that's why people need to think about the fact that the reason they're putting the money in the TSP is because at some point in their life, they're going to need to take it out and spend it. And they want the purchasing power of that money to increase or at least stay the same. And the G Fund is not going to do that.
Okay. Here, we just got a call from Beverly in Columbia. She said she's 68. She's been retired 1 year. Her TSP, it's 47% in the G Fund, Treasury Securities, 52% in the C Fund, which is the S&P 500, and 1% in the F Fund, which is bonds. Beverly says she's getting nervous, lost about 10%, I guess, last year. Should she reallocate? And she's a FERS retiree, by the way.
Okay, well, Beverly, I don't know how old you are.
68.
You know. Oh, 68. To me, when I look at this, I think, gee, C Fund is way down. Maybe it's a good time to take some money from the G Fund and put it in the C Fund and buy cheap. And also, the S Fund is down even more. So an even better time to allocate your investments a little bit more and take some money from the G Fund and put it in the S Fund. And knowing that that's long-term money. Now, Beverly didn't say, is she taking money out of her investments? Does she have other investments outside the TSP that she can use? That's a huge part of this equation, because if she's not going to need money for 10 years, then it's all long-term money. But if she is going to need money, you know, like now or a year from now, she's taking money out of her investments to live on, well, then that's a different issue.
Yeah, and these days with medicine and the way people are, 68 is almost a kid. She's several years away from even the required minimum distribution, which is not that onerous a burden.
Yeah, I mean, Beverly could live 30 years, and it wouldn't be surprising, and so she's going to need a lot of long-term investments at that point.
Okay. All right, we're out of questions here. Do you want to just take it and kind of wing it? What you would tell people, and this is maybe a good time to...
Let me just one mention that TSP, they haven't updated their website with the 10-year average annual returns yet, but they were kind enough to send me the figures. And over the last 10 years through the end of December, we saw a relatively normal, what I would consider a normal distribution of returns, which means that the average annual rate of return for the C fund was 7%, for the S fund was 8%, for the F fund it was about 5%, and for the G fund it was about 3%. And you can see that no matter what the year-to-year fluctuations were, the stock funds, excluding the I fund, significantly outperformed the F and the G fund, and the F fund outperformed the G fund. And remember, these 10-year figures include the worst stock market decline since, the Second World War, at least.
Mm-hmm.
So in spite of that huge decline in 2008 and 2009, stock funds still solidly outperform the G fund and the F fund. And that's why I urge people, don't be as concerned about the short-term fluctuations. Stocks are long-term investments. You should know in advance that you're going to have big fluctuations, that there's going to be a 20% or maybe even a 30% decline at some point, but that historically, if you rode out those declines, you would have been rewarded for your patience. And I just recently read a quote from Warren Buffett, and he said, the stock market is the greatest way to transfer money from impatient people to patient people.
Mm.
And what he means is the impatient people are selling when stocks decline, and they usually sell, you know, when they're the lowest, because that's when they're most likely to panic. And the patient people are just holding on and continuing to buy.
You know, I knew someone, or I knew him through a financial planner, and one of this guy's best customers, and he got out of the market in 1987, I believe. That was a bad year, sometime in the 80s. He's never come back.
Yeah.
And people say that's one of the toughest things is it's one thing to get out, another to come back. Lorna Larson's giving us the hook here. We need to take a break. Be right back here on federalnewsradio.com. We've got a question from Mary in Texas. Welcome to Your Turn, Mike Causey, talking with Arthur Stein, well-known financial planner in the Washington area. And his today's column, I hope you take a look at it because it was sort of a setup for this show, but it gives you links to his blogs, and he's covered many of these issues in greater detail, and I think it'd be useful to you. Got a call here from Mary in Texas, and she said her husband is a FERS retiree. He's 64 years old. 100% of his TSP allocation is in the L-2020. Don't plan to touch it until regular minimum required minimum distribution, so when he's 70 and a half. So he's got six and a half years. Should we leave it in the 2020, or is there a better place to put it for the next 6 years? Good question.
Well, again, in terms of whether to leave it in the 2020 or someplace else, the question is, when do you need to start taking money out of your investments to live on? And this question doesn't contain that information. It tells us when he has to start making required minimum distributions at 70 and a half, 6.5 years from now, but it doesn't tell us whether he is going to be able to reinvest those or just he would, you know, need those to spend. And that's a key point. But the other thing is, at 64, again, has to think about the money that he's going to be spending 10 years from now and 20 years from now and 30 years from now. That L-2020 fund is in 4 years going to be 72% in the G fund and 8% in the F fund, only 20% in stocks. And for long-term money, I think that that is too conservative. Okay. It's okay for short-term money. Money you need in the short term.
All right, we've got the phones ringing off the hooks here. Now, 23-year Fed, going to retire in 5 years at 55. He's 55, retired at 60. 100%, 100K in CS&I funds. Should I move or let it ride? Steve.
Let me see that, Mike. It's just so, wow. So he is 50. Steve is 55, and he's going to retire at 60. First question. And, you know, the reason I keep asking these questions is, as a financial planner, I give different advice to different people depending upon their circumstances. So what I'm going to ask Steve, and he's not here to answer it, you're going to retire at 60. Does that mean you're going to quit working or just leave the federal government? Because if you're saying you're going to retire at 60 and quit working and never work again, you'd better have a lot of investments, because you're looking at what could easily be a 30-year retirement, could be a 40-year retirement. 60 is a very early age to retire. You know, as we discussed earlier, you could easily end up being retired more years than you ever worked.
Right, and again, it's when you're going to touch the money, need the money, right?
It's when you're going to need the money, and when you do start needing the money, you're not going to need it all at once. You're going to need it over decades.
Yeah. Okay, a couple more phone-ins here. Chad from D.C. says, contributions 91. In fact, I'm going to let you read this.
Okay. Okay, so Chad says contributions to TSP, but has credit card debt. Should he drop the allocation to pay off to the TSP to pay off the credit card debt? Yeah, this is a tough decision. It's an important decision. So what Chad is saying is that, you know, I've got credit card debt. Should I contribute less to the TSP and use that money to pay off the credit card debt? First of all, Chad, you probably already know this, but at least contribute 5% always, because then you get a match from the federal government. If you contribute more than 5%, the federal match does not increase, but at least put in 5%. And then, yes, it can make sense to reduce your contributions to the TSP for a short period of time to help pay off the credit card debt. But I would also do it after you look at your budget, what you're spending money on, and be honest to yourself about why you ended up with credit card debt. You should, no one should have credit card debt. I mean, in a financial emergency, yeah, it could happen. But you're employed by the federal government. I just have to assume that you're living too large. You spent more than you make. You should not be doing that. And once you pay off that credit card debt, you just have to promise yourself and your loved ones that you will never have credit card debt again, because it's a killer.
Arthur, there's another question at the bottom there.
Oh, okay.
Phone's ringing off the hook. This is the last
this
one.
This is Melinda. She has TSP invested in the G and the C funds, 50% each. Is it okay to switch from into the S or the F fund with 5 years to go? Certainly the F fund, which normally outperforms the G fund.
Very good. Okay. Sorry to cut that off, but we had busy lines today. We'll see you all here next week. Have a good week, and be careful.